विवक्षोर्मुखतो भूम्नो वाणीर्वाग्व्याहृतं तयो जले चैतस्य सुचिरं निरोधा समजायता। Word for word, vivakshu. When there was a need to speak. Mukhata, from the mouth. Bhumna, of the supreme. Vani, fire or the controlling deity of fire. Vak, vibration. Vyahritam, speeches. Tayo, by both. Jale, in the water. Cha, however. Etasya, of all these. Suchiram, a very, very long time. Nirodha, suspension. Samajayata, did continue. Translation. When the Supreme desired to speak, speeches were vibrated from the mouth. Then the controlling deity, fire, was generated from the mouth. But when he was lying in the water, all these functions remained suspended. Purport. The peculiarity of the gradual development of the different senses is simultaneously supported by their controlling deities. It is to be understood, therefore, that the activities of the sense organs are controlled by the will of the Supreme. The senses are, so to speak, offering a license for the conditioned souls, who are to use them properly under the control of the controlling deity deputed by the Supreme Lord. One who violates such controlling regulations has to be punished by degradation to a lower status of life. Consider, for example, the tongue and its controlling deity, Varuna. The tongue is meant for eating, and men, animals, and birds each have their different tastes because of different licenses. The taste of human beings and that of the swine are not on the same level. The controlling deity, however, awards or certifies a particular type of body when the particular living entity develops a taste in terms of different modes of nature. If the human being develops taste without discrimination, as does the swine, then the controlling deity is certainly certified for the next term to award him the body of a swine. The swine accepts any kind of foodstuff, including stools, and a human being who has developed such indiscriminate taste must be prepared for a degraded life in the next life. Such a life is also God's grace, because the conditioned soul desired a body like that for perfectly tasting a particular type of foodstuff. If a man gets the body of a swine, it must be considered the grace of the Lord, because the Lord awards the facility. After death, the next body is offered by superior control, not blindly. A human being, therefore, must be on his guard as to what sort of body he is going to have in the next life. An irresponsible life of indiscrimination is risky, and that is the declaration of all the scriptures. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nangayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare So here in this verse the universal form of the Lord is being further described. So here now the Supreme Lord has desired to speak, and the speeches are getting vibrated from his mouth. And also the controlling deity, fire, is also manifested. So in this section, is describing about the development of the universal form of the Lord. So we have heard about the universal form in the Bhagavad Gita in the 11th chapter. Krishna shows his universal form to Arjuna upon his request. And also in the Bhagavatam, in various sections, the universal form is described. So in fact, Shukdev Goswami is speaking about the universal form because Maharaj Parikshit inquired about it. So in the previous chapter, in text number 46, Shukdev Goswami told Maharaj Parikshit that he said that basically the reason I'm speaking this is because you had inquired at some point in the past. So he said that your questions as to how the universe became manifested from the gigantic form of the personality of Godhead, as well as other questions, I shall answer in detail by explanation of the four verses already mentioned. So it's referring to the Chaturshloki. So he's going to be saying that I'm going to elaborate and I'm going to explain about how the universe got manifested. So Canto 2, there was some description, and even in Canto 3, there will be description of the creation. So we know the universal form is an imaginary form, and it is described for the gross materialist. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, he writes that in the commentary it's not very clear who's asking this question, but this question is asked to Shukdev Goswami. Why are you again and again describing the universal form of the Lord and the Self? Why are you not describing the sweet Leelas of the Lord? Why are you not describing the sweet pastimes of the Leela avatars? So he's asking, why do you always speak about the universal form and the Self? And why very little sweet discussion about the qualities and forms of Leela avatars? So then Shukdev Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Shukdev Goswami, he replies that the topics of the Leela avatars, the pastimes, they can only be relished by the pure devotees. They can be highly relished by the pure devotees who are Nitya Siddhas on the spontaneous platform. So he's saying, but those who are sleeping on the bed of bliss of sense pleasure, and those who have fainted in the waves of sufferings of karma, they cannot understand, or they cannot relate to it. So he says, their absorption in Maya can be broken by topics which are concerning Maya. So that's what Shukdev Goswami says, that their absorption in Maya can be broken by topics concerning Maya. Therefore, there is a description of the universal form and of the Self. And of course, Srimad Bhagavatam also contains lot of description about Brahman and Paramatma. So there is description of Brahman and Paramatma also. The idea is that to raise them to Bhagavan platform. That's why there is description of Brahman and Paramatma also. So there's so many sections which describe about the soul, how we are not the soul, we are not the body and we are the soul. Then there's description of the universal form again and again. So he says, he gives the example of if someone is haunted by a ghost, the way you get them out of that haunted situation is by a ghost mantra. And he gives another example of if someone is suffering because of fire, you treat them with fire. So he's saying, in the same way, if someone is affected by Maya, very grossly affected by Maya, the way you take them out is by descriptions of Maya in relationship with the Lord. The main point is those descriptions of Maya or the universal form have to be in relationship with the Lord. That's when they take one out of that illusion. So therefore, the creation of the Lord is called the Srishti Leela. So this is also a pastime of the Lord, the creation. So because Mahavishnu, he is totally independent. He is not affected by the three modes of nature. So this creation is also his Leela, how he expands, all these universes come out of him, he enters into each of these universes, and he wants to lie down, then he creates a bed, which is, you know, Anantashesh, the snake, and then the water comes out from, that's also emanating from his body, and that water is Suchi, it is pure, because it's coming from his body. So this is also a whole pastime, and how he enters into the bodies of all living entities, and how the creation takes place, all the elements are manifested, and he has to activate those elements. The whole thing is a pastime. So for most people, they cannot appreciate the form of the Lord. They cannot appreciate the pastimes of the Lord. They take them to be mundane. That's Mayavad understanding. So I was talking to one guest at Urban Yoga. So he doesn't have internet, I'll say his name. His name is Fox. So he was telling me that he's from the Sanatan Dharma school. So he agrees with everything. We are not the body, we are the soul, there is karma, there is repeated birth and death. So everything sounded quite fine. So then I asked him, okay, so what is your understanding of the form of the Lord? What is your understanding of the Supreme Lord? He said, our understanding is the Lord is an energy, he is impersonal. And he said, but the reason he comes to this world is to, of course, the reason when he comes to this world, he has to accept a human body, a body made out of matter. Because if he comes in his energy form, that's like a nuclear energy and the whole universe will get destroyed. Therefore, he has to come in a form of matter so the universe won't get destroyed. So this is what Prabhupada says, that most people, when they think the form of the Lord to be a product of matter, and that is Mayavad understanding. And then their understanding is, the Lord spoke the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th century. Of course, he spoke it 5,000 years ago. But then again he came in the 18th century, and he spoke the Bhagavad Gita. So this is a new edition of the Bhagavad Gita, and this has more detail than the previous one. So people come up with different types of understandings. For most people, they cannot appreciate the form of the Lord, and they cannot understand his pastimes. So the Puranas, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions, they're very intelligent, and they try to trick the living entity in some way or the other. So they come up, the Puranas, they describe about the universal form of the Lord, they describe about the Self, about Brahman, the Paramatma. The whole idea is to elevate the living entity, to bring him to the Bhagavan platform, to be a servant of Krishna. So in this section of verses, we can understand that the living entity is not independent. Of course, the soul is independent of its connection with matter. And you know, we can read that in the Bhagavad Gita. Also, it's mentioned in the 11th canto, that the jiva is independent of the three modes of nature. There it's mentioned in chapter 13, text 27, that waking, sleeping and deep sleep are three functions of the intelligence and are caused by the modes of material nature. The living entity within the body is ascertained to possess characteristics different from these three states and thus remains as a witness to them. So from statements such as this, we can understand that we, the living entity, the soul, are independent of material nature. And of the five topics of Bhagavad Gita, the soul, the Atma, karma, prakriti, what else is there? Time and Ishvara. Thank you. So prakriti and the jiva, they are karma is temporary. So the prakriti is eternal and the jiva is eternal. So there's two types of prakritis. There's the para-prakriti and apara-prakriti. So, but we are independent of the inferior energy of the Lord, which is material nature. But because of false ego, there is this connection with the material energy. But in our material state, in our material existence, in a conditioned state, we are always dependent. We are never independent. So the everyone thinks they're independent. Or the tendency of the conditioned soul is to think they are independent. Only independent person is Krishna. He is Svarat, Abhigya Svarat. He's full of knowledge and he's independent. Krishna is fully independent. He doesn't depend on anyone else for his existence. And he doesn't depend on anyone for his pleasure. And just by his will, everything is carried out. So Krishna has various potencies, multifarious potencies. Parashya Shaktir Vividhaya Shruyate. So Krishna has multifarious potencies by which he can execute all his desires. He just has to desire and then everything is carried out. So Krishna is fully independent. But we and all the other expansions of the Lord are dependent on Krishna. So, but especially in material existence, in our stay in the material world, we are fully dependent. And actually the material world is interdependent. So material nature is interdependent. As in text number 13, there's a description of Adi Daivik, Adi Bhautik, and Adi Yagyik. So, but people think they are fully very independent. But we can see that from the time of infancy, we are very dependent. A young baby is very dependent on its mother and its parents for its nurturing, support, and care. But as we grow, we tend to think we are becoming independent. So as we grow, we become physically a little bit more independent. We don't need someone to hold a hand to walk. We can walk ourselves. We become emotionally independent a little bit more. And we become financially independent. So this is what people are aspiring for. They want to become physically independent. They want to become emotionally independent and financially independent. They don't want to depend on anyone else for their sustenance. And they want to have their own sense of security. They don't want to get a sense of identity from someone else. And they want to be physically strong. So to a degree we can be, but ultimately we are always dependent on someone else for our existence and our stay in the material world. We can never be fully independent. So an independent person thinks, I can do everything on my own. I don't need anyone else. So these days, and the reason people are so, they want to be so independent because that is a reaction to being dependent. That is a reaction to dependence. So no one wants to have their sense of identity being made by someone else. They want to be intellectually independent. They want to be able to think for themselves. They don't want someone else to solve their problems and think for them. But the reality is we are always dependent, right? Something goes wrong, then we run to a doctor. If the water doesn't come one day in our taps, then we are in anxiety. Or if the gate doesn't open, like this morning I was stuck. I was trying to come for japa and the roller door won't open. It would only half open, then I couldn't take the car outside. Otherwise the roof hits. So for 1 hour I'm trying to push. And the neighbors also came, there's so much noise. There's so much noise that people woke up and they came down and they thought someone was trying to break in. So then we are pushing and we are calling the emergency and there was a whole drama. And then 4 people are pushing and then we opened it and then I took my car out and other people also took their car out. So we are always dependent on someone else. We can think we are independent, but we are not really. So then even people think that material nature is independent. There is no controlling agency. So this tendency of being independent is very strong because we are conditioned. So we can see in our schools we are taught that nature is independent. There is no God in control. It is just somehow by random chance it has come about. this existence took place by Darwin's, you know, theory of evolution. There was a big bang and somehow the right elements were there, everything was there by chance, and then somehow it's come into play. And it is independent, and we can do anything with it. Because it is independent, there's no controller, there's no proprietor, so we can do anything we'd like to do with it, because it belongs to us. So in this way, people are in illusion. But from Bhagavatam, we can understand that we are not independent. So there is the... mentioned in the last verse, that there is the Adidaiva. So material nature is controlled by demigods. Of course, it is under the control of the Lord. Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyate Sa Characharam. But Krishna, he doesn't directly interfere with the material world, with the running of the affairs of the material world. Krishna is enjoying in the spiritual world, he's playing his flute, he's enjoying his pastimes. But he has put demigods in charge of the material world as administrators. So they have different functions, there's 33 million of them. So the demigods are the Adidaiva. So they are the controlling deity, they control our senses. So Adi Yajna is our senses, the subtle senses. And Adi Bhuta is the gross senses. So Arjuna, he also asked this question to Krishna in the 8th chapter, the very first verse. So Arjuna says, Kim tad brahma, kim adhyatmam, kim karma purushottama, adi bhutam cha kim proktam, adi daivam kim uchyate. So this question was asked by Arjuna. He said, O my Lord, O Supreme Person, so kim tad brahma, what is Brahman? Kim adhyatmam, what is the self? Kim karma purushottama, what is karma? Then he asks, adi bhutam cha kim proktam, what is this material manifestation? And adi daivam kim uchyate, and what are the demigods? So Arjuna asks these questions, and then Krishna in the next two verses, he answers Arjuna's questions. So, the adhyatma or the self, adhyatma, atma means, it can mean the body, mind and soul. And Prabhupada in his translation he writes, it can mean the body, mind, the soul and the senses. So adhyatma refers to the subtle sense and it also refers to the soul. And Adidaiva are the demigods. And Adibhuta is the material manifestation. So everything we see, the gross manifestation, whether the sense objects or our gross senses, that is Adibhuta. And Adiyagya is, sorry, Adhyatma. Adiyagya is the Supreme Lord. Adhyatma is our subtle senses. So the example was given of the eyeball. So the eye is the Adibhuta. And Adhyatma is the subtle sense, which... And then there is a corresponding deity. So in this verse, the deity is most probably Agni for the mouth, for the tongue. Sorry, sense of speech. It is Agni. So in the previous verse we heard was Varuna for the tongue. So in this way we can see we are not independent. So the gross sense cannot function without the subtle sense. So the eyeball cannot function without the subtle sense, which is the subtle eye. And that cannot function without the demigod. So in this way we can see we are totally dependent. We are not independent. We are actually interdependent. And then you can go the reverse order. The demigod has no function without the subtle sense. The demigod has no existence. Otherwise, what's the role of the demigod? If there's no eye to control, he has no role to play. That's why he's put in charge. And then the eye has no function, the gross eye has no function without the subtle eye. So in this way we can see everything is interdependent, as was mentioned before. So this idea that we are independent, that is illusion. We are fully dependent. In fact, we are interdependent in our existence in the material world. So the jiva is independent of the modes of nature, but the jiva is dependent on Paramatma. So it is said, sarvasya chaham hidi sannivishto matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha. So the living entity is dependent on Paramatma. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. And upadrashtanu anumantacha. So Krishna says, as the Paramatma, I am the overseer and the permitter. So we can see, we might be independent of material nature, but we are fully dependent on Paramatma. So everything, the remembrance, knowledge, forgetfulness, he sanctions all activities. And then the Paramatma is dependent on Krishna. So Krishna says, Vishta Byaham Idam Krishnam Ekam Shena Stito Jagat. So Krishna says, by, what's that verse? Last verse of the 10th chapter. Does anyone know the translation? Yeah, by a single fragment of myself, I pervade all this universe. I pervade and support this universe. Yeah, here it is. Yeah. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. So Krishna is the shelter of Paramatma. So Paramatma is an amsha or a part of Krishna. So the Paramatma pervades, as we heard in the previous verses, the Paramatma pervades material existence as Shirodakshaya Vishnu, as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and as Mahavishnu. So he Paramatma is, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is the maintainer of the material universe. So Krishna is the Ashraya, it was mentioned, Shvash Rashraya. He's the shelter of all shelters. Krishna is the supreme shelter. He's the supreme refuge in which everything is existing. So the purpose of our senses is to engage in the service of Krishna. So Krishna is the master of our senses. That's why his name is Hrishikesha. Sarvapadi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam Hrishikena Hrishikena sevanam bhaktir uchyate. So Krishna is the master of all the senses. So all the senses are meant to be engaged in the service of the master of the senses, Krishna. So when we do that, we can get rid of all upadhis, designations, false designations, by doing that. So as Prabhupada mentions in the purport here that the senses are, so to speak, offering a license for the conditioned souls. So we have these senses, and the purpose of the senses is twofold. We can either engage them in our own sense gratification, or we can engage them in the sense gratification of Krishna. So we all have these senses, the gross senses. These days, even if you lose your sense now, as Gaurav sent me a video, now they're developing this bionic technology. So I was quite impressed when I saw this video he sent me that even if you lose a limb, doesn't matter. There is a bionic limb. And in the future, this technology will be very accessible. So at the moment, they're especially using it for the military. So soldiers who lose their limbs in warfare or whatever. So then they have these legs. And it's amazing what these legs can do. You just desire, you want to move your leg like this. And it pretty much does what a human leg can do. What a biological leg can do. So the bionic leg can do that. So we have these senses, and that is functioning because of the subtle sense. Without the subtle sense, that cannot function. So, but they are taking the credit for that. They are thinking they are the karta, they are doer. They are so proudly saying, we have created this bionic leg. And so they are competing with nature. As Gopamandesh was mentioning, they are interfering with nature. So the purpose of the senses is either we can use it for sense gratification of ourselves or Krishna's sense gratification. But if we use it for our sense gratification, then we get tied down to the material world. That's the problem with that. So Krishna says, yagyarthat karmano anyatra loko yam karma bandhana. That he says, if you engage in sacrifice for me, then you won't be bound to this material world. If you engage in yajna, sacrifice, then you will be free from bondage. Otherwise, we will be in bondage. And Prabhupada mentions that, especially if one transgresses regulated sense gratification, then the reaction is very, then the consequences are very severe. So sense gratification is of two types. Number one, the Shastra says, is you can perform regulated sense gratification. So that is the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. You perform sacrifice, you perform different activities, and you get a certain result. So a lot of people, when they approach the Vedas, because they are so lusty, they are so, they have so many material desires, that's all they can see in the Vedas. And Krishna says, Yam imam pushpitam vacham pravadanti avi. What's that? Pravadanti anupaschidaha. Veda vada ratha partha nanya dasti vadina. That is said that men of small intelligence, they are bewildered by the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend elevation to higher planetary systems, high birth, strong body, beauty, and so on and so forth. So because people are so lusty, when they approach the Vedas, that's all they see. That's all they look for. So that is regulated sense gratification. And the advantage of that is one does not fall down into sinful life. So as the Ishupanishad describes, there is vikarma. Vikarma activities means engaging in sense gratification but not following Shastra. So when we do that, then there is heavy reaction. And so today's society is engaging in vikarma activities. 100% vikarma activities. There is no Shastra. They're not enjoying as per scripture. So the scripture gives all these different types of sense gratification with the idea that one will eventually give them up. That's the idea behind that. So Chamasa Muni, he tells Maharaj Nimi, he asks, what is the fate of those people who are engaging in sense gratification? So then Chamasa Muni, he explains that the sense gratification is of two types, regulated and unregulated. So he says that regulated sense gratification is there, and the idea is to stimulate people to go a bit further in their spiritual life, not just get stuck there. And eventually they renounce it. So therefore there is meat eating sanctioned in the scriptures. So, but it is not like unrestricted meat eating, you know, wide scale slaughter, which we see today. So that meat eating is, you have to do it on a certain day, you have to chant certain mantras, there's a ritual behind it. And you can only eat an animal which has five claws. And then if someone wants to drink alcohol, then there is also a sacrifice for that. One has to do that. One can't drink it, one can only smell it. After the sacrifice, one can only smell it. And so this tendency to eat meat, have sex, and intoxication is there in all conditioned souls. So for illicit sex, the license is get married. So if someone is attached to sex life, then the Shastra recommends that one should get married. And even in that, the prohibition is one can only engage in sex life for the purpose of procreation, nothing else. So this is how one can enjoy in a regulated way. So today, this might sound also very, you know, unrealistic to most people. They cannot understand this. You know, how can you just look at wine and smell it and not drink it? Or how can you get married and not have sex? But if one does this, then one doesn't fall into sinful life. But if we... I was hearing a lecture by Prabhupada yesterday. He was talking about alcohol. He was saying that alcohol is so contaminated that if it contacts a vessel, no matter how many times you wash it, you cannot use that vessel. It becomes moochy. Because alcohol is so contaminated. He says you have to throw that away. So we can see that how, what kind of negative effect it will have on our consciousness if we engage in these activities. Therefore, Shastra prohibits. So in Krishna consciousness, we only concession is for illicit sex is get married, and you can enjoy in a regulated way. So there is a license for enjoyment, as Prabhupada is mentioning here. So a license means there are certain rules. There are boundaries. You cannot cross. Just like you cannot drive a car on the right-hand side of the road, because you've got your license, which means you understand you can't drive on the right. You have to give way. You can't just run over a pedestrian. So if you're playing a video game, you can do that, because you know it doesn't matter whether you have a license or not. So in a video game, you can run over people and you know crash into buildings. But in the real world, you can't do that. If we break the rule, then the police will catch us and we'll be behind bars. It's that simple. So in the same way, if we break the laws of nature, then we have to suffer. Then we have to. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a nice description of the different hells in the fifth canto. So if you break the rules, what is the reaction? It's all there. So we have to engage our senses in the service of the Lord. And when we do that, we can be free from reaction. All the sinful reactions are destroyed, and we develop love for Godhead. So Prabhupada then further says, the tongue is meant for eating, and men, animals and birds each have their different tastes because of different licenses. The taste of human beings and that of the swine are not on the same level. The controlling deity, however, awards or certifies a particular type of body. So we are not independent in which body we choose. So that was karmana deva nitrena jantur deho papadyate. That there are these demigods who award us our bodies according to our karma, according to the modes we are associating with. And Krishna, he also describes that in the 15th chapter. He says that, he gives the example of air and aroma. He says that the living entity in the material world carries its different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. So different kinds of fragrances are carried by the air. So the air is pure, but depending on which environment the air comes in contact with, it will carry that fragrance, right? That smell that will carry. So in the same way, we are lifetime after lifetime, we are transmigrating in different bodies, and we're coming in touch with different modes of nature. And then we are getting, according to that, we get different bodies. So in the next verse, Krishna explains that the living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. Thus he enjoys a particular set of sense objects. So then we get, according to the state of mind at the time of death, we get a certain type of body with a certain type of eye, nose, tongue, and ear. So where I live, there's one dog. It's a very peculiar dog. His tongue is always sticking out. He's a small dog and no one knows what breed he is. Even the owner doesn't know. But his tongue is always sticking out to the right. And only the first time yesterday I saw him, he took his tongue out and he was cleaning his face. And then again he put it to the right. So he has a particular type of tongue which is grouped around his mind. You know, whatever desire he had in the previous lifetime. He became a dog like that. So he's just old, he wears a jacket, and he just walks very casually. The owner has to pick him and put him in the car and take him out. So he has a nice life, apparently. So the point is, we get a particular type of body according to the state of a mind. So a human life is a life of responsibility. Prabhupada ends the purport by saying that a human life should not be lived in an irresponsible way. So responsibility means we have the ability to respond in a particular way. That's what's the meaning of responsibility. We have the ability to respond. So only human beings have the ability to take responsibility for their actions. Animals cannot. Because animals, they act on instinct. An animal is more or less programmed to act in a certain way. And they cannot take responsibility for that. Why they're acting in a certain way. And therefore, there is no karma for them. But a human being, they have to... a human being has to take responsibility for their actions. So, if we act in a certain way, then we have to either enjoy or suffer. So a lot of people say, sometimes we even hear from devotees, you know, "Oh Prabhu, oh Mataji, the reason I'm like this, I cannot improve in my devotional service, is because of my past conditioning. Because I was raised in a certain family, or it's because of my karma. Or it's because of my, you know, my forefathers, we're coming in such a family line. The tradition has been this. I've been raised in such environment. I've gone to such a, I've lived in a such type of lifestyle. I've been brought up in such a way. I've gone to such a school. I've had such an exposure. Therefore, I'm like this. And I cannot change. But the point is, in the human form of life, we can change. We have the ability to make independent choices. Because we have very minute free will. But most people, they are affected by the environment. They're very deterministic. So most people are affected by the environment. They don't use their free will. So if we use our free will, we can... I was giving the example of Viktor Frankl in Urban Yoga. So Viktor Frankl, he was a Jew, and so he was thrown... This is during the time of the Holocaust. So he was thrown in the concentration camps. And so in the concentration camps, you can just imagine what the environment will be like. It's very depressing, full of death, and it's stinky, and the whole negative environment is there. So Viktor Frankl, he didn't get affected by his environment. So he used his creativity. He was thinking of something else. He was thinking, when I come out of here, I'll be lecturing my students the lessons I learned in this environment. So he was using his creativity. So everyone has this creativity. We can imagine our future, what we want it to be. So, but the problem was, he only chose another material circumstance. So he's still bound by the laws of nature. But we have the choice to choose from material to spiritual. So we have that free will. We can choose about what we want to do with our free will. We can engage it in Krishna conscious act. If we take shelter of the holy name, we can overcome our conditioning. So conditioning means, you can see these experiments they do. They put the rat mouse in a rat trap, mouse trap, for many, many months. And then they open the door, the mouse goes outside, but again it comes back, though it is free to go. So in the same way, we are conditioned, but we can break that conditioning by using a free will to engage in spiritual activities. So when we engage in devotional service, then Krishna, he helps us with his strength, we can overcome that conditioning. So, it's almost time. I'll stop here. I have a couple of points, but I'll leave it. You have any questions or comments? One question. Yes, Prabhuji. Mahatma Prabhu.
You mentioned that some type of heat is allowed. So
what? Some type of what? What I read in the Bhagavatam was an animal which has five claws. So many. You can't eat a cow. Not a cow. Cat has five claws. I don't know. Is anyone, any veterinary here? Any vet? You know better than me, Prabhu. You're a doctor. Controlling deity, yes. So, It means that in the previous verse we saw the mouth was generated and the tongue was generated, right? So now because the Lord wants to speak, so speech came out from His mouth, and also at the same time the demigod who controls speech was created. That's what it means. He's Agni, fire. The demigod of fire, he controls speech. Because he's technically, I don't know, but he's a demigod, he has powers to control.
That's why in the traditional circles, it is said that fire resides in the mouth of the Brahmin.
Yes.
Because they will never ignite mastic. They just evoke the
mantra.
Fire.
Okay. That's interesting. There you go. Vishwanath Chakravarti mentions that. I'll read it out to you. What he mentions. I thought someone will ask that question. I was thinking you will ask, not my brother. So I'll just read that and end there. It's almost time. It's a little technical. This section is a bit technical. So he says, when obstruction took place in the water for the universal form, without breathing he could not continue existence. The nostrils are the location, the gross form, by which breathing can take place. When the life air, nabha vasti, became active, dodu yati, the two nostrils became differentiated. Air or vayu who carries the fragrance is called devata, and the fragrance is the sense object. The nose is the subtle sense object. Jijrikshata means he who desired to receive smells. So that's the answer to your question. Okay, so we need to end here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srinad Bhagavatam ki.